The vagaries of geography, winds, and currents left the Andaman Islands isolated for many thousands of years. That, and the fierce reputation of the people who lived on these remote islands. An account that dates to the year 850 reads, "The people on this coast eat human flesh quite raw. Their complexion is black, their hair frizzled, their countenance and eyes frightful. Their feet are almost a cubit in length, and they go quite naked." The British were the first to establish an outside presence on the Andamans, which lie off the coast of Burma. They were occupied by the Japanese during the Second World War and have been part of India since 1947. The islanders are an anthropological and linguistic mystery. They may be among the last remnants of the first humans, and a few, a very few, still live in a Stone Age culture where fire is kept but cannot be made. Madhustri Mukherjee has written a book about the islanders and the effects of their exposure to civilization. It's called The Land of Naked People. She joins us from the studios of Radio Frankfurt in Frankfurt, Germany, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi.
Hi.
Good to be here.
You grew up in Calcutta, and you write in your book that you developed a fascination for these islanders who, I guess, exist, from reading your book, on the fringe of Indian consciousness.
Well, yeah, as a child growing up in India, I knew of the islands as a place where the British had put a penal colony. They would put the most hardened murderers along with the political prisoners on these islands. And when these freedom fighters, to us, escaped from jail, they were sure to be killed by these so-called savages who lived in the jungles. And that's pretty much all I knew about the Andamans until many years later, living in New York City, I met a journalist from India who told me that there were a group of these people still living on their own little island. And if you happened to approach that island, they would shoot you with arrows. And that's when I just had to find out what this was all about.
Well, you write also a lot of the stories of early contacts with these people who had been isolated for so long. Tell us what happened to the boy who became known as Jack Andaman.
Well, Jack Andaman was captured on one of the early sort of exploratory trips to the Andamans by a surgeon by the name of Moath. He was the leader of the expedition, and he wanted curios, apparently. And at some point, he and his soldiers, they went ashore, and the Andamanese shot at them with arrows. And one of them was captured, and his name was, he was called Jack Andaman. And he was taken to Calcutta, which at the time was the British capital in India and a pretty grand place from what I read, and shown off to people and taught to wear clothes. And pretty much I think everyone was interested in seeing this so-called cannibal savage. People were frightened of him. And then Jack got sick. And Moath decided that he should be returned to the island. So on one of those ships that was going off to Burma, he was put on it, and then they landed him on the island, said bye, and he was stripped of clothes because if he went in clothed among his countrymen, he might have been killed. And that was the last that was heard of him. He was never seen or heard from again.
You mentioned a British colony was established on the islands. At least some of the islanders apparently hoped that the prisoners there might join them in resisting the British. But tell us the story of a man called Dudnath Tiwari.
Well, Dudnath was one of the sepoys who had been of the sepoy mutiny, and he had been taken to these islands. He escaped along with about 100 other inmates. He made a mass escape. And at one point, these escaped prisoners, they found themselves surrounded by Andamanese who were shooting at them with arrows, and there was a massacre. Dudnath happened to escape, and he was found, and they shot at him again. And he didn't die. At that point, he was adopted by one of the Andaman tribes. And his head was shaven. He walked around naked with them. He was fed. He was even married to a woman called Lipa. And apparently at one point he overheard the Andamanese planning an assault on the British penal settlement. They wanted to all get together and attack it. And he managed to escape at that point, and he warned the British authorities so that the authorities were prepared. And when the Andamanese showed up, we don't really know how many of them died, but they were shot at with cannons and guns, and that was the last of the Andaman resistance.
And for his services, you write, the crown pardoned Tiwari, who returned triumphant to the mainland, and in the forest, Lipa was left pregnant.
That's right. There's even a little corollary that is, Dudna Tiwari went around telling everyone in later days that Andaman women didn't take quite as good care of their men as did Bengali women.
We're speaking with Madhusri Mukherjee. She's the author of a new book called The Land of Naked People, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. After India took control in 1947, did policies change?
Well, I think policies towards one of the groups changed. This was a group that had actually attacked the British and felt the full impact of the occupation. They had died off in the thousands of disease. And just a few tens of them were alive. The Indians actually found them a home, put them on their own little island, and gave them some services, welfare, and so on. But other than that, policies did not change. And I think, for example, one of the British policies was to try and befriend the Andamanese by enticing them with things like tobacco, in the early days, alcohol. And this was so that they would stop killing outsiders and be pacified. Now, the Indians continued to follow a similar policy. It wasn't alcohol and tobacco anymore, but we have a lot more things that are attractive to people whose highest technology is a bow and arrow. Boatloads of government officials would go to the beaches of this one hostile group called the Jarawa. If you went into the Jarawa jungles, you would get shot, even in 1995 when I visited first. But at the same time, if you went with these government officials to one of the Jarawa beaches, there was an established ritual by which the Jarawa would get gifts, and they would dance and sing and climb on people's backs and have a great time, and then the visitors would leave. And this was part of this policy of pacification, and the Jarawa resisted this for over 100 years because the British had tried essentially the same thing. But in the last few years, they finally gave in, and a few groups of young men, women, and children started to come out of the forest in peace to meet with outsiders.
There is another group you mentioned that is still living by themselves on one island in the Andaman group, the North Sentinel Island. And you went there, and I'm going to read what you wrote about the description of it. North Sentinel, you write, was larger than I'd imagined and more luxuriant, brushed with myriad hues of green. The mangroves looked like they'd been combed uphill, their canopies lining up into sloping bands. Under us, the water was a brilliant aquamarine, and its depths visible, the streaks of corals. It was the purest, luscious, most serene environment I'd ever seen. A turtle surface, ponderously gulping air before it dived again. Please, 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 let us not destroy this last haven. That's a beautiful description. And one of the things that has preserved this, I think you said scientists say no more than 100 people could possibly live on this island. But one of the things that has preserved them so far is the ban on visits. Yet you went to try to visit them.
Well, yes, of course. I do have conflicted feelings about that. One hears of people making clandestine visits. You hear of criminals trying to hide there. You hear of fishermen trying to poach in those waters. And I know of a group of divers who went to nearby corals. So I guess in justification, I can say that I wanted to know how much contact they have with outsiders. And I was, I was relieved that they actually seemed quite scared of us, of the boat that we were on. And I don't think we would have met with a welcome, which is a great sign, because I certainly don't want them to go the way of the Jarawa, because once the Jarawa, which is the other hostile group I mentioned, once they started coming out of the forest, they started getting epidemics of measles, influenza, etc. And it's the end for them. It just might look like we have a lot to give them, but we really have, it's so easy for us to take away what I believe to be their peace of mind. They seem to be at peace, and I would like to leave it that way.
Hmm. Of all the lessons that you draw in the contacts between these, you hate to use words, Stone Age peoples and civilization, what do you think are the most important to take away?
Well, I think it's universal. We are seeing it happening now in the Andamans. But it's happened before. It's happened certainly in the U.S. When I first came to the U.S., I found it so hard to pronounce words like Chicago, Okefenokee. And suddenly it struck me that these were the names of extinct peoples and that they had lived here and they had vanished almost without trace. And what's amazing is that on the Andamans you can actually see these people, you can get to know them and see what it feels like to be completely overwhelmed by another culture. And what I'd like to just be able to remind people that this process has happened many, many times, and that in the 21st century it shouldn't be happening yet again, and I hope we can do something about it.
Madhusri Mukherjee, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madhusri Mukherjee just wrote a book about the Andaman Islands and their effects of their exposure to civilization. It's called The Land of Naked People, Encounters with Stone Age Islanders. She was with us from the studios of Radio Frankfurt in Frankfurt, Germany. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.